Yo, this is Skinny Pete. Keep listening to Montana and Venice.
Next on the show, we have a man, a star of one of the most successful shows of 2012 and the years before that as well. He's got a new film just premiered yesterday, the Sundance Film Festival, already getting a real excellent buzz. But what a career this man's had. We're here now to talk about that with the man himself, Charles Baker. Oh, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, man. Thanks for having me.
No, not at all, man. Now, of course, you've seen the buzz out there. I mean, it must be sometimes overwhelming, but most of the times it's heartwarming to see how well Breaking Bad is being received, not just in the US this year, but, of course, all across the globe. It's the snowball really is rolling now for that show.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing to me. I love it, too, because I've traveled around the world as a youngster, and I lived in the UK for a while. I lived in a little town called High Wycombe in England, and went to school there for about a year. I love the fact that we're getting fans from all over the world telling us how much they love Breaking Bad and how much they love Skinny Pete, which I like that part.
Exactly. We're going to explore that character tonight and many of the other characters in Breaking Bad, because I think that's one of the big pull factors of the show is how deep the characters are and how much significance each character has, not just in terms of the plot of this series, but also life. I think the writers have done an amazing job and are doing an amazing job. But what a big ad break. What a big advert break for all the fans now. I mean, what are we waiting for? The summer, just to see the second half of this season. That's a very unusual move.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and I wish I knew the thinking behind any of the wait, but I'm just as anxious as everyone else to see how it ends. But yeah, the characters in the show are incredible, and it's what's most incredible to me is the way Vince Gilligan has taken Walter White and taken him from this completely nerdy, harmless kind of science teacher and turned him into one of the scariest gangsters in town, and in the process he's managed to keep all the fans on his side. Nobody's really turned against this guy who's just done some horrible things with very little justification at this point. And I think that's really kind of incredible for both the writers and Bryan Cranston's performance of that character.
And of course, there's a classic flow to the script, you know, this kind of conflict, bad being done, but then of course resolution, and that's what I think everybody's waiting for in the summer. Everybody's really waiting for that resolution on this season, so
right.
It's really going to be interesting to see what happens. But of course, back to yourself, I mean, a lot of people obviously come in at Breaking Bad for your career and say, oh yeah, that's a guy from Breaking Bad there, but if we trace things back, I mean, you were never destined, in your mind at least, when you were young, you were never destined to be an actor. It was all about the stage, to be a rock star, am I correct? You wanted to be a musician.
Right.
That was your only goal in life when you were younger.
Yeah. Well, it was, I think it was just to be an entertainer. I knew I wanted to be entertaining people, and I knew that expressing myself creatively was the best therapy for me, and I believe it's the best therapy for anybody is to be able to express yourself in a creative way. And I've tried all of it, and I've done a little bit of everything, and I think I love doing television. I love doing film, too, because of the, I guess for lack of a better word, the way it kind of makes you immortal. That performance, those performances are there forever. Theater, it's there and gone. You do it once, and that memory is the only thing you have, but I love being able to go back and hopefully someday, with some of the stuff that I'm kind of proud of, going back and showing my kids, my grandkids, hey, this is what I did. And they can actually see it instead of just kind of see pictures or hear about it.
Exactly, and that is a key thing. One of the few things that the internet crowds of downloaders, etc., have failed to kill at the moment is, of course, you know, visual elements, films, movies, TV series, music. Mm-hmm. Now has become, as you probably agree, and many people do out there, that it's become very superficial now. It's a lot of click, listen. Yeah, that's okay. Let's listen to the next album. So maybe I think you definitely chose the right path when it comes to being immortal. Well, what was the turning moment then in your life when you suddenly went, this is it? Now, I read somewhere that it was a performance where you were a lawyer. This is we're talking very early days now. And you were quote, and I remember the quote, you said that you remember that it wasn't the fact that you were on stage pretending to be a lawyer at that particular time when you were asked to do that, but you were a lawyer. And that was the thing that blew you away, that, oh my God, I am that character, you know?
Yeah. It was the release, kind of just this ultimate freedom of being totally immersed in somebody else's skin. That was an amazing thing for me, and I didn't feel self-conscious. I didn't feel like, oh my God, people are watching me. I didn't even think about any of that, and that's a totally different thing than like when you're standing in front of an audience singing a solo, where you're watching them and you can see that their reaction right away, and just completely losing that. I think that was the first time I'd ever really just had that complete abandon. And it was a show called Whose Life Is It Anyway? It's actually, I found it's kind of a rare thing to feel when you're acting, to be able to get that total immersion in it. It's something that I strive for in every performance, to where I just kind of can just totally lose myself in the character. And that's one of the things Breaking Bad has done for me, is that's the first character I've ever played for a consistent, for a long amount of time, consistently the same character. And to be able to, the more I do it, the easier it is to just slip on that hat and just slip into Skinny Pete's skin. And it's kind of an actor's exercise for me, in the way that theater was a great exercise in keeping you focused and staying in character and staying constantly staying in the moment. This new thing with television, with me, new for me, has been that ride of playing the same character over and over again through several years, and still finding the same thing, and that's been really neat.
Being such a big fan of Breaking Bad, I wanted to ask how the opportunity came to play the role of Skinny Pete.
It was really just kind of luck. In that whole, I was prepared for an opportunity when the opportunity showed up. And what it was here in Texas, we have a casting director who does a lot of film and television, who had the original pilot for Breaking Bad when it was being shopped out to other networks before AMC picked it up. And apparently another network was getting close to producing it, and so she got the script and was starting to cast small roles for the show before it got canceled, before the idea of the other network decided to cancel doing it. So she had the scripts and was doing actors' workshops, which a lot of casting directors do, to scout for talent and to help talent develop their skills. And she was using these scripts for real-life classes. And as we were using the scripts over a period of months, she got the news that the show was actually going into production. And luckily, she knew the casting director in New Mexico, who was casting all of the small parts, the local talent kind of roles that are just there for, you know, days, for a day or for an episode, or even just, you know, for extras. And those two casting directors kind of coordinated their efforts to find small characters in Texas that they weren't able to find in New Mexico. And so I got called in to read for a Skinny Stoner role. And originally there were three roles. It was a Skinny Stoner, a Chubby Stoner, and a Tattooed Stoner. And I showed up for the first audition pretty much looking just like Skinny Pete without the hat. I had the wife beater on and the jeans and the tennis shoes, and I didn't have the beanie on. And I did the audition as the Skinny Stoner, and then went home. About a week later, I got a call, told them I needed to come back and read for the same role again, but they changed it a little bit. So now it was just a Skinny Stoner and a Chubby Stoner. And all of the lines for the Tattooed Stoner were kind of split between the two of us. and came in and read for the second part, and I guess a couple weeks later found out I got the part. Went in and shot that and thought I was done. And about a week later, they called me up and said that they wanted me back. And I've just been going back ever since. It's been an incredible opportunity for me, really.
And the rest is history, as they say. What can you tell us about the kind of research that went into playing the role of Skinny Pete? I mean, did you feel that playing Pete was as spontaneously creative as your previous roles in past?
He was really kind of spontaneous, because I had worked up a little bit of kind of a character and had gotten a little bit of ideas of what I wanted to do. But then when I got there and shot my first episode, the director had his own ideas. And so he would just, you know, shoot it several times and go, no, you know, just say it like this, and say it, don't try and act like you're high, and don't try. And I think Skinny Pete was seemed a lot more stoned when I was doing it first, and he kind of had me back off on that. And we just kind of played with the character for that one episode. And then when I came back, the next director had just kind of decided, well, you guys established what you guys are doing, what Skinny Pete does, so do that. And so I had to kind of make up the rest from there. But it's been a fun sort of retroactively developing the character. It's kind of the opposite way that you would normally do it. I still, even up to season 5, I'm still finding out new stuff about my character that I had no idea, like his piano playing skills. And so it's been kind of a fun exercise for me.
He would about the evolution of the way Skinny would speak originally is interesting, especially given that you originally did voice acting a long time ago. I mean, there's almost this underlying statement and sad fact embedded in Skinny Pete's character that, like most meth addicts, there was a time where he would have been a person with ambition and talent. Now, we know that he did some time with Tuco, but did Gilligan or any of the writers on set ever give you a clearer account of his past and what he had been through that fans, you know, might not know about?
No, actually, we haven't really talked really much of anything about where he came from. And like I said, I've tried to come up with some backstory on my own, but typically when I do, I get another episode and read the script and go, oh, well, that canceled out most of what I thought about him before. And it's kind of neat how they use a lot of us as people off camera, and they find clues from us and they add that to the script, and it starts blurring the lines between who we are and who we're playing, even though they're such radically different people. And so I used to play piano a lot, and I used to be a musician, and I kind of gave all that stuff up to go my own direction. And I think a lot of people have, you know, at some point, a lot of people have thought about being musicians and then went, you know what, I'd rather be an accountant or do something else. Skinny Pete just happened to have fallen in with a different crowd and decided to go a different way. It seems almost like the perception people have of Skinny Pete is that, of course, he can't be anything better than what he is, or he never was anything better than what he is, because he's who he is. But then they see stuff like the playing piano and go, oh, wait a second, right. He might have been another he might have been another kind of human being before. And it helps people start going, okay, well, now what would have brought him to this? And honestly, I haven't tried to really think about what it is that would have brought me from playing the piano to where Skinny Pete is now, mostly because I've been waiting to see if they don't explain it in one of the next episodes. So it's kind of, it's fun for me, but probably a little frustrating for a lot of people.
Excellent. Now, How did you transfer your previous job experiences as recreational therapist in season 3, where you began attending NA meetings with Jesse and Badger? Did having a past experience working with afflicted people in real life help in playing a character that was quote unquote claiming to need rehabilitation?
It helped a little bit in that I understood more of the ramifications of what we were doing.
Right.
I think I understood a little bit more of how to play up the character without totally not being Skinny Pete. I don't know if that made any sense. It was really rough to kind of pretend to be Skinny Pete who was pretending to be somebody else. And figuring out how to do that took a lot of thought in how I can convince these other ex-drug addicts, not so much convincing the rest of the audience. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Now, what's interesting is if we're talking about the evolution of Skinny Pete in Breaking Bad, I think it's important to note that, like Jesse's evolution in Breaking Bad, Skinny Pete's redeeming qualities are minimal in comparison. You know, there really aren't any. I mean, he clearly wants to do good, as evidenced by his successful completion of the 12-step program in season 3, but it kind of falls apart in season 4, doesn't it? I mean, would you say it was too late to have any hope for Skinny Pete changing anytime soon?
I don't know if it's ever really too late. I know from personal experience that it's not ever really too late. I think that sometimes it might have to come, that kind of change has to come in increments or in stages. And I think that first stage was an eye-opener for him to see what life could be. And but I think he's so desperate to have that companionship that he has with Badger and Jesse that he lets the idea of their companionship overwhelm his sense of right and wrong sometimes. But I think it's something that might be a conflict within him, and something that hopefully that they might deal with in the last few episodes. And honestly, I don't know if they will or not, but I've been holding in hope that that's something that they'll help, that they'll show Skinny Pete is growing and coming out of that that kind of mentality, that follower mentality that he has.
Well, I know that myself and the millions of other fans would like to think this did happen within the closing of this season, for sure. What would Charles Baker advise Skinny Pete to do at this point in time?
One, find a better class of friends. I think that's the first thing he should do, is find some people who have the same kind of aspirations to improve their lives, as I hope he would, or as I hope he's getting. I'd like to see him become a guy who turns his life around and hopefully becomes kind of a guy who helps other people turn their lives around and stops being so dependent on others' approval for his happiness.
Me too. Now, one of my favorite Skinny Pete moments is the scene where Skinny Pete is almost having this argument with Badger about computer games, Left 4 Dead and Resident Evil 4, and which one is better.
Right.
I mean, between Pete and Badger, there's a lot of talk about zombies, to the point that I wondered if or not there was any subliminal context to the discussion. Would I be overanalyzing the scene to think that the zombies you're talking about almost become a symbolic reference for both Skinny Pete and Badger, now being the Walking Dead, metaphorically?
Wow. You know, I think if I would have said that to one of the writers, they probably would have told me, yeah, you're overthinking that. They may have even subconsciously had that that same thing going on in their head, but I don't know that
right.
was necessarily intentional, or if it was, they didn't bother telling us. It's very interesting theory, though. I really like that idea that that we are the zombies we speak of. The writer who did that scene, he told me that that's one of the few scenes where he really just got to be himself, and that's why he likes writing for us, because he can write stuff that's more the nerdy science fiction kind of stuff, the video game stuff, geek stuff. He said that's his kind of thing, and so he loves to be able to write scenes like that for us, because that's what he knows.
I recall there being a lot of positive feedback from the computer game generation, from the community, for that scene in particular, too. I remember.
Yeah.
Definitely. Now, Breaking Bad has always had a surprising but realistic, potent, comedic strike, you know, particularly in seasons 1 to 2 with your character. I mean, how much creative control did you and do you have over the comedic element you bring to the table? I mean, I get the impression you're a naturally funny guy, and a lot of that humor is improv.
None, actually. I don't have any creative input whatsoever, other than just kind of the timing and how I say the lines. And for the most part, I'm not really even trying to be funny. I'm trying to be as true to the character and to the dialogue that character has as I possibly can. And I don't even think about the comedy of it until after it's been done. And then I watch it and go, and oh yeah, okay, that's kind of funny. I've always wanted to be funny. I don't get a lot of opportunities to be funny in a lot of the other TV shows and movies that I've done. I'm a lot of times a really bad guy or total drug out or something like that, and so the opportunity to actually be funny kind of scares me sometimes, because comedy is hard, and so I try to prescribe to the Leslie Nielsen school of comedy, which is don't try to be funny, just say it with honesty and total commitment, and believe everything you say, and let the funny come out of the context. And I hope that's what works. And I don't always listen to myself, and sometimes I catch myself trying to be funny, but for the most part I just try and be real, and the writing pretty much takes care of the rest for me.
Would you say you find more creativity in Skinny Pete's laughably awkward one-liners and funny moments versus his motives to help build this empire and portray such a believable thug to Jesse and Walter White?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a tough one for me. I don't know if you could quantify the creativity levels on that set. I don't know on that one. I think you got me stumped.
Okay. No worries. It's a bit of a weird question, if I'm honest. It's a question I usually ask artists we have on the Friday Night Live show we do. So I figured I'd flip it and ask yourself. But no, I understand. That's fine. Now, we briefly touched on your music earlier, the music career in which you wanted to undertake. How much did musical theater help you channel the now infamous scene in season 3 where Skinny Pete is seen playing the keyboard?
I think it helped a lot. I thought I was going to be so scared when I had to shoot that scene, knowing that I knew for about a month that I was going to be shooting that scene, and I thought I was going to be so scared that my hands were going to be shaking and that I was going to screw it up. So I practiced to a point that I could do it with my eyes closed in hopes that the muscle memory would take over. And I was oddly surprised when we got to shoot that scene that I was less nervous shooting that scene than I was shooting most scenes that I shoot for the show. And I think the constant practice was helped, but I think also knowing how meaningful the scene was for Skinny Pete's character, it was a really endearing moment for me to be able to show off this side of Skinny Pete and to give him a softer side. And I think, yeah, the musical theater experience kind of helped me translate all of that into just channeling directly, going back into that, what I was saying about the play, where I was able to really just kind of that was one of those moments where I channeled Skinny Pete completely and left out the fact that I was on camera and was able to let go of all of that. And I think it was the combination of the music and the performance that really helped that. So, yeah. But I was scared. I was scared.
I could imagine that was very much a pinnacle moment for yourself, wasn't it, in that show? If I'm not mistaken, that specific scene, I understand you have a love-hate relationship with the reaction to that scene. I mean, why do you think that it took a passion and essentially a starting journey point of yours for people to recognize the depth of your skills and what you were bringing to the table to Breaking Bad?
I think, and I don't want to sound ungrateful or like I'm bitching about this, but I think a lot of people take Skinny Pete for granted as far as a performance. A lot of people comment that they were surprised to find out that I wasn't just some drug addict they pulled off the street to play this role. And my first reaction is, wow, how little respect do you have for this profession to think that that's how they would cast an award-winning TV show? How could you not? Why would you think that about somebody? And it's because I'm nothing like Skinny Pete. People that know me, when they first saw me playing the show, my best friend actually, when he watches the show, he laughs his head off every time he sees Skinny Pete, because he knows how very little that character is compared to me. And he just thinks it's ridiculous that I'm playing this character. He thinks it's hilarious that I play a character like this. And so I don't get insulted, but I get a little like, huh, you didn't know I was an actor? And sometimes I can turn that into, oh, well, that was a compliment. That means I do so good that they don't know that I'm acting. And then I think, well, nobody actually recognizes the fact that I'm acting, so I'm not really like. Do they not really think of me as an actor? And as an actor, I kind of, that's how I get more work, is if people know that I'm an actor. And it's been kind of hard to convince people to hire me to do anything else, because of that kind of mentality that, oh, he's a drug addict who happened to get lucky at acting. And it's like, no, I'm actually an actor who's classically trained who happened to get lucky in a role as a drug addict. And you know, I tell people, if I had gotten into a Mad Men for my first recurring role, playing a mail clerk in an office, would everybody from then on just assume that I was a mail clerk? And they don't have that problem with other actors, and I'm not. I kind of get questioned the thinking behind the whole, oh, he played the drug addict, so he must be a drug addict. But I do love some of the reactions of how it made people rethink that kind of thinking, that, oh, Skinny Pete's, he's just a drug addict. Oh, wait, Skinny Pete used to be a beautiful human being, and something sad and tragic has happened to make him turn into this. And that to me is a beautiful kind of thing, to make people open their eyes about a lot of the people who are hitting rock bottom because of drugs are just that. There used to be something beautiful about them, and something happened to make them this way, or that allowed them to make themselves this way.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that it's very much a double-edged blade, isn't it? And I think, like you said, the only thing to attribute it to is the fact that people, I think, in general, underestimate Skinny's role. But I think the more we see of Skinny, the more we understand him, as you two are understanding him, as you get into his role through these seasons. Right. I mean, do you ever Google yourself at all?
I do periodically on advice from, I can't even remember who I got the advice from, but they said, you need to Google yourself every now and then just to find out what people are saying.
Right.
In case somebody's saying, hey, this guy beat up my little sister. You want to make sure nobody's putting out, you know, false information.
That was you? That was you?
Yeah. Darn. I thought I got away with it too. So I periodically do, at least once a month, just to see what's going on. And, it's kind of fun to see, just how really popular Skinny Pete has become. I really enjoy that. It's a total blessing. I mean, I never really, before I actually started working in this business, I really thought that working in this business was just a pipe dream for me. And so to this day, every time I get to do it, it's just like a dream come true. And I try not to take a minute of it for granted. But here's the trick is when you have to mix the business with the art. So I love the art part of it. I hate the business part. And I hate that the business, that getting more of the work relies on the business than it does on the art sometimes. So I'm having that conflict, but that's hopefully getting better as the more I learn, the more I do.
You mentioned about conflict. How important is it in being your own fan first and foremost and following what you believe in and want, even if the fans demand different or what they're already used to?
I strongly believe that, but it's my personal opinion. I strongly believe that you have to be like a salesman. You can't sell something that you don't truly believe in. You can't get other people to like it if you aren't passionate about it. And I learned that lesson in college when I was auditioning for a scholarship. And I did this great audition for this scholarship. And then they did the interview after the audition. And on the interview, I was actually kind of pretty down on myself. I think I crossed the line between trying to be humble and end up coming... Well, I'm pretty sure I came across a lot more with like low self-esteem, and I ended up losing the scholarship. And my college professor came to me after the interview and said, "Look, you would have had that scholarship if you hadn't talked yourself out of it." And she said, "I don't care how you feel about yourself. If you want to make it in this business, you have to convince people that you are worth putting the effort into, that you're worth investing their time, their energy in. And that was a huge lesson for me. And I had to learn how to be a lot more, more of my own fan and kind of denigrating myself, to people to try and, seem magnanimous or whatever. I had to become my biggest fan in order for other people to want to see me. And so that's what I started doing. And that's what I try and teach students that I work with still. Whenever I work with other young acting students, I try to teach them that you have to be your biggest, your manager. You have to be your own PR agent. You have to do all the things that the big stars are paying other people to do. And that's how you get up in this world, in this business anyway. And for me, it's pretty much worked. And
it's almost being this, becoming this walking billboard, so to speak, is this mandatory requirement that the industry expects you to have nowadays, isn't it?
Right, yeah. And it's I'm still learning it. I've lived in Texas all of my career. I've lived in Texas, and I'm getting ready to move to LA. And I went to LA for 3 or 4 months to try and find a place to live. And I'm finding that I'm still kind of learning what to say and what not to say, and I'm pretty sure I've said a lot of things I'm not supposed to say today, but I'm still learning, and it's all a learning experience. So, but yeah, you do have to kind of expect, you have to live like you're constantly advertising for yourself. You try not to go in the public looking bad just in case some fan happens to see you. I try to avoid looking like Skinny Pete anywhere I go in public, just to avoid people. I don't mind people recognizing me as Skinny Pete. I just don't want them to get the impression that that's what I am when I'm not playing him.
Right.
And it's changed the way I live day to day, you know, how I dress, when I go out, if I'm going shopping, do I just wear sweatpants and a t-shirt? And if I do, what do I do if someone recognizes me and wants a picture? And it doesn't happen a lot, but every now and then it does. And I'm learning slowly but surely any of that can affect you positively or negatively, depending on the whim of the people at the time, I guess.
Do you ever get fans quoting lines from Seasons on the street?
Not a whole lot here. In Texas, it's kind of weird. Not a lot of people watch the show. And I guess the few people that do watch the show don't really expect to see anybody from the show hanging around Fort Worth, Texas. And so I don't think anybody really, you know, automatically goes, "Hey, that's Skinny Pete," when they see me. When I was in California, several people all the time, it was almost a daily routine, someone would stop me somewhere, but I didn't get a lot of quotes. Every now and then, of course, I guess I did, because the main one was, "Yo, I'm Skinny Pete." I get that a lot. But other than that, not a lot of the other quotes.
Classic. You're one of the three characters, along with Brand Badger Mayhew and Steve Gomez, to appear in all five seasons of Breaking Bad, despite not being main cast members. What have been some of the biggest challenges in setting out to meet the standards you as well as the team set for yourself?
Keeping up with Brian and Aaron, really just keeping up with the performance-wise. Anytime we get a scene with them, you kind of feel like you got to up your game. And I was told in the second season that I'm pretty much being hired. I'm auditioning for my next episode. Every episode I do is an audition for my next one. And so for me, it's always been kind of a hanging by the end of a thread kind of routine on this show. And that's been my biggest challenge, is just staying on their good graces. Staying consistent with the character and trying not to make any waves, you know. The biggest really challenge for me has been trying to figure out ways to, you know, get some ideas through to the writers without seeming like you're trying to give the writers ideas. And I haven't succeeded yet, but I'm constantly trying to say, "Hey, you know, would it be neat if Skinny Pete had a really hot girlfriend for this next episode?" And that never works for me.
Well, I know that there's still a few episodes, aren't they, to wrap up the entire season. So, God willing, you do get that creative control closer to the closing of the show. Now, without giving any spoilers, I mean, what can you tell us about the remainder of Breaking Bad?
It's going to be awesome. I can almost guarantee it's going to be incredible. And I think it's going to be surprising. I really don't know any more than anybody else who's seen the first part of season five. I really don't know anything more than that. I know these writers, I know Vince, I know that they've had this planned from the beginning to have a definite ending to the show, and not to just kind of drag it out and see how long they can make it go before they finally get canceled. And when you have a plan like that, I think things are bound to go right.
Yeah.
I think they aren't going to be scrambling. They've had a lot of time to think about it. They've had a lot of input from fans as far as where they can go and what they've missed, and I think they're gonna address a lot of the stuff that people aren't thinking about, and take you to places that you don't, that you have no idea are even available.
What is the writer's relationship with the fans like? It sounds like, and it's always felt like to me, it's a very interactive relationship. It might not always be that, of course, the writers appear on the forums and write back to fans and tell them, yeah, that's a good idea. But I'm guessing the writers listen to the fans. I'm guessing the writers also Google Breaking Bad a lot and are really looking to see what the people, number one, are saying, but secondly, what they want. How much of Breaking Bad script-wise storyline do you think has been influenced by the fans?
I do get the distinct impression that, yes, they do listen, and they do really pay attention. But I couldn't tell you how much of it they put into the writing. That's one thing that I've definitely been completely left out of, is the whole writing process. I could imagine that they've taken some hints from different fans, from all the different forums, the Breaking Bad, AMC.com message boards. I wouldn't be surprised if they're not taking information from that and using that as to help either spur the story on or possibly help find them gaps that they've maybe have overlooked and are finding ways to justify those gaps or explain them or fill them in one way or the other. Because I've been noticing our fans are pretty smart people, and they think of things that I never thought of. They have ideas and theories about how it's going to end, about what has happened before, about what we might have missed. It's amazing some of the stuff that people are coming up with, and so I wouldn't be surprised if they're not using a lot of that to help help make them as good as they are.
Yeah, I mean, I assume they would be, because I know a lot of the shows over the past decade, or even 5 years, they've been massively successful. A lot of it towards the end of the run of this of the actual program as well has been dictated to by fans. I mean, I remember Lost had to come back with another mini episode just to answer all the questions that all the fans were banging at the door at the end of that program to say, what about this? You missed that. And it's like you said, it's all the loose ends that the script writers go, oh, we forgot. What about, oh, we didn't seal that off. We didn't. And so they had to come back with a little mini episode for the fans. So, but again, they're the people who are sitting by the TVs watching it, aren't they? They're the people who do ask you for a photograph when you go out to the supermarket. So, you know, in a way, they are the people that are spurring you all on to do this. Now, I get the feeling that to some extent you are looking forward to shaking this kind of pigeonhole that you are, Skinny Pete, and to show the world of acting and all the fans that there's much more to you as an actor. And like you said earlier in the interview, classically trained, you're not a drug addict, let's just put it that way. This is what you're trying to prove to people, and you've got the chance to do that. Now, of course, Sundance Film Festival, very positive feedback for the new film, Ain't Them Bodies Saints, starring Casey Affleck. Now, of course, does this new film give you a chance? Does this give you a chance now then to shake off Skinny Pete, to show the world a different you in this new film?
In Ain't Them Body Saints, it's definitely different than Skinny Pete. He's still a bad guy, but he's got a lot more layers than Skinny Pete ever has. He's a very quiet character. I play a character named Bear in Ain't Them Body Saints by David Lowery, which like you said, it's getting phenomenal reviews at Sundance. I haven't seen any of it yet. I'm really looking forward to it. I unfortunately had to miss it this time, but I'm really looking forward to seeing that. That movie, and what I'm really hoping is that when Terrence Malick's To the Wonder, which comes out in the U.S. in April, I'm really hoping those two will help people see that there is more to me than just the skinny drug addict. Both those movies are just, they're incredible films. From what I've heard, like I said, I haven't seen either of them yet, but I've heard just wonderful things about them. Into the Wonder, I play the polar opposite of anything Skinny Pete is. He's a carpenter in a small town. He has a romantic side, and it's a totally different thing. A very quiet kind of character. Mm-hmm. In Ain't Them Body Saints, he's a lot more darker, kind of sinister. He's been compared to the killer from No Country for Old Men. Mm. Just kind of this out of the blue demon from hell kind of guy. But David Lowery, the director, he let me do some things with that character that in the end kind of took a lot of the scariness away, in my opinion. It gave him some tenderness, in a sense, despite the tragedy that's happening around him at the time. So I'm looking forward for people to see both of those films.
Definitely, and we are as well, because like I say, I think you deserve these opportunities to come now to actually, even though, of course, Skinny Pete is in the heart of all the Breaking Bad fans, it must be, you know, you're even changing the way you live because you don't want to appear like Skinny Pete when you go out in public, you know, for different reasons, obviously. But something you're proud of, but at the same time, something that you want to push further and expand away from. And these two new movies this year are definitely doing that in terms of reviews. And the new one coming in April will as well, hopefully, God willing. Now, speaking of the people, we've got a few listener questions. Obviously, they knew you were coming up on the show, so they've passed their questions through. We're just going to read these out as they've been written to us and get your take on it. So let me just throw this one in the mix then. Speaking of working with people, says somebody, what was it like working with Chuck Norris on Walker, Texas Ranger? How far have you come as an actor since those days? Asks one listener.
Wow, Walker, Texas Ranger. That was like my very first big speaking role in any kind of on camera job, TV or film. And Chuck, he was one of my heroes when I was younger. I mean, he was the big action star when I was a kid. And so I was scared to death of working with him. But he's a really nice guy. He treated me like an equal. Didn't do anything scary, and even kind of put me in a headlock and gave me a noogie at the end of the shoot. And so that was kind of an amazing experience for me to be able to work with him and
live. Yeah.
I remember when I was shooting that scene, the very first scene I shot in that movie was with Chuck Norris and Jeanine Turner. And I remember sitting at the table, he was getting ready to start interrogating me. And all I could think in my head was, oh my God, they're going to know that I have no idea what I'm doing. They're going to just throw me out of here as soon as I start talking. And so I kind of freaked myself out throughout that whole scene. And oddly enough, I think it helped my performance because I toned it down a lot, trying to keep myself under control.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the mark of a good actor is always to have that fire in your belly, I should imagine, and to always have that anxiety that, you know, you can then translate into performance, translate into confidence, and that's, I think, a skill in itself. Another question then, quite a generic one from a couple of listeners. What is your personal favourite Breaking Bad moment? Your favourite Breaking Bad moment?
It used to be when I first got to say my name, you know, yo, I'm Skinny Pete. But since then, it's been the piano moment, being able to play piano on camera. I've played piano when I was a kid for a long time, but it was always just for friends and family and small little groups. I never actually played piano in front of an audience. And so that was really the first biggest performance I've ever had on piano, and I'm proud to say I didn't get one negative comment, at least none directed to me. about my performance on there, and I was just really proud that I was able to come across as competent on the piano, and the endearing part of that being that it, you know, gave Skinny Pete a little bit more depth. That also made that one of my favorite moments.
Excellent, excellent. So I got a question from Jay in Manchester, and Jay says, Gilligan once expressed partial interest and created a spin-off show based around Saw. If the opportunity to base a show around yourself, Badger, and Jesse were to arise, I'm imagining it's an opportunity you would instantly grab.
Yeah, I would jump on that in a heartbeat if it were the same writers and since we're producing that. I don't know that it would happen. I think he's kind of backed up on that idea, but I would love to do any kind of show spin off of that. Just because I know these guys are capable of doing some amazing things, and I'd love to go for that kind of ride. I really hope someday to work on another show with Vince, whatever it is. So if that's what it takes, I'd be there.
Excellent. That would be incredible. Yeah, that would be incredible. Now, Samantha asks, and Kent, she has a very interesting question, in fact. She says, were there ever initially any plans for Walter White to try his own product in seasons 1-4?
I don't know. I don't know if he would even consider that. I think he kind of has a distaste for people who actually do the product.
Yeah.
Which I think it kind of makes it easier for him to justify what he does. I kind of think he looks at us as kind of cockroaches in a sense. Or at least in a way, I think he's managed to develop that mentality since the beginning. Possibly just to help him be able to cope with what he's doing. But yeah, I don't think he would try it. I couldn't imagine.
Agreed. I don't think he's that foolish to do something like that.
Right.
No. James in Kent again from Kent asks, is Breaking Bad the modern day Scarface?
Yeah, I think it could be. I think that's a lot of what Vince kind of wanted it to be.
Mm.
It's definitely got the same kind of place in history, as far as in cultural history as Scarface, I think, now, because of what it's managed to do over the past 5 seasons. So yeah. That's a good call.
Excellent. And last question comes from David in Doncaster. He asks, do you have any plans to collaborate on any music with Combo from Breaking Bad, who is also a musician?
We had actually talked about doing one or two projects, but nothing has come of it yet. I think our styles might be just a little too different for us to really be able to work anything out that would appeal to anybody. I'm a very kind of a classical and more of a folksy kind of music guy, and Combo has a pretty hard rap music career going on, and I think it would end up coming up across too much like Linkin Park with a little bit of Simon and Garfunkel mixed in, so I don't know how well that would work, but it would be fun. He and I did jam together in my hotel room once while we were shooting an episode, the episode where we flashed back at the strip club. He and I, he came over to my hotel room and hung out for a little while, and I brought my guitar, and so we tried to jam a little bit. That was fun, but I don't know if we're ever going to collaborate on anything for public consumption.
We've got one more question as well from Pat Heeb, who asks here, and this really answers itself now, I think. Any way we could see Charles Baker's rap career take off after Breaking Bad is over? I think you've just answered that question.
You know, I saw that one posted on Twitter, and I really had no idea how to answer that without screaming, hell no.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody wants to see me try to rap. It would come across as a very, very, very white guy rapping, and nobody needs to see that.
Well, it's worked for quite a few people this year. It's become quite a trend, you know, of the kind of mummy's boy image in hip hop has really sold a lot of records. I agree with that. Yeah, but it's something you have something for everybody in music, haven't you? Something for everybody. That's what it's all about. But anyway, listen, Charles Baker, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this evening. Thank you for taking the time out. Wish you all the success with these two films, the one that's about to drop and the one in April. And, of course, everybody waits now for the summer for the conclusion of this season of Breaking Bad. It's been a pleasure, Charles Baker. Take care of yourself and God bless.
Thank you very much. You guys have a great, great day. And I appreciate you having me on.
All right, man. Take care of yourself. It's Charles Baker.